Welcome to Cultivating Hearts Radio Ministry. We're here in the studio today with Tara, and we have some guests from Grace. We have Amanda Rowe and Amber Rainbolt, and I'm Janelle Applegarth. Today we're going to be looking at Matthew 20, verses 1 through 6, and we're going to be talking about grace and the different ways that Jesus teaches that and how that applies. But first we're going to get into why Jesus is teaching about this.
God is good. Thanks, Janelle. Good job. All right, so essentially it comes from Peter asks Jesus a question, and we have to start off before we even get started. I want us to have this in our mind. Peter and the disciples have just seen Jesus talk through with the rich young ruler and gone through about the possessions of the kingdom, and the disciples are like, who can be saved? They ask that question, and Jesus answers, with men all things are possible. But Peter looks at him and he says, but Lord, look, we've left everything. We have left it all, and we've followed you. So what will there be for us? He's asking, what do we have? Because we've left it all for you. There's nothing that they have held on to. And this is when Jesus begins to explain to them what he's about to teach in this parable. And he says, I assure you, in the messianic age, when the Son of Man sits on his glorious throne, you who have followed me will also sit on 12 thrones, judging the 12 tribes of Israel. Everyone who has left his houses, his brothers, his sisters, his father, his mother, his children, his fields, because of my name, will receive 100 times more and will inherit eternal life. But many who are first will be last, and the last shall be first. Okay, so that is what he has told them in preparation. And now he begins the story of the parable of the vineyard worker. And as he tells the story, this is in Matthew 20, verses 1 through 16. So Jesus said, the kingdom of heaven is like a landowner who went early in the morning to hire workers in the vineyard. And after agreeing with some of the workers that he was hiring, he said, oh, I'll give you a denarius for one day. And he sent them out to the vineyard. Well, then again later, he went again at 9 in the morning. And he saw others standing in the marketplace. They were doing nothing. And he said to them, you also go to my vineyard, and I will give to you whatever is right. And so off they go. About noon and 3, Jesus went, the worker went again, and he hired people. And then at 5, he went and sent out, standing around, saw them, and he says, why are you standing here and doing nothing all day? And they said, oh, because no one hired us. And he said, go to my vineyard. There was only 1 hour left. And he said, go to my vineyard. And when evening came, the owner of the vineyard told his foreman, I want you to call all the workers in and pay them their wages, starting with the ones who came in last and ending with the ones who came first. So when those who had been hired about 5 came, and he gave them a denarius, the first ones that came assumed, of course we're going to get more. We're going to get more than just a denarius each. But when they received a denarius, they complained, and they said to the landowner, these men came in the last hour, and you give them equal pay to what you've given us. We have been in the burden of the heat of the sun and the heat of the day. And the landowner said, oh, friend, I didn't do any wrong to you. Didn't we agree on a denarius? Take what's yours and go. But I want to give this last man the same I gave you. Don't I have the right to do what I want with my own business? Are you jealous because I'm generous? So the last will be first, and the first will be last. May God honor the telling of his word. So as we hear this passage, ladies, let's just talk. What immediately comes to your mind as you hear this parable? What are your thoughts?
Mind your own business.
Yeah, that's a good one. Amanda and Amber, we want y'all to speak up, so don't be afraid. So what comes to your mind when you hear this parable?
Definitely, like, in today's society, we're very centered on fairness and everybody getting their, like, what they're deserved. And so
good
it
point.
Seems like in this, that's the biggest issue. Everybody wants to get what they deserve and that they think they deserve more.
Good. Amanda, you have something?
Yeah, with me, I just see how easy it would be for me to side in with the workers and be like, exactly what they're saying of, I was here first, why are they getting the same reward as I have?
You know, I think I would identify with the one that's thinking, why are they getting exactly what I did when I've worked hard? But essentially what it came down to is he made an agreement with them when he hired them in the morning, and the agreement was a denarius. Mm-hmm. That was the agreement. And so he didn't lie to them. He told them what he was going to give them. Later in the day, he didn't tell them what he was going to give them. He just said he'd give what was fair, right. Yeah. What was fair on some translations, right, in the translation I did. And so I think it's kind of, it is, we culturally think of work ethic, and I expect to be treated a certain way. So that's a factor. And then the fairness factor, the principle of I deserve because I have done, is in our culture so much. And in many ways, it's a works mentality. And so that's a big, big, huge thing. Okay, so as we're looking at this and examining this parable, we need to understand that there's several things that we can look at. So let's just examine the landowner. What do you learn about the landowner?
He's tricksy.
He's what?
He's tricksy.
He's tricksy, okay. Because he had a plan, mm-hmm. but they didn't necessarily know the plan, okay? What else? What do you learn about him?
He's very generous.
He is. He is very generous. I would say he's pretty needy. I mean, he went how many times during the day? It was like he went at 6 a.m., he went at 9 a.m., he went at noon, he went at 3, he went at 5. He has a huge vineyard. The need he has is so great. He kept hiring as he saw men all day long. So his need was pretty big, wasn't it? What else would you say about him?
He deals with the situation very calmly when they accuse him of cheating them. He says, I've not been unfair to you. He calls him friend. And like very is very diplomatic in how he handles the situation.
Okay, I'm going to address the word friend. In Jewish culture, it was actually a calling out.
Oh, never mind.
No, but for us, the word friend, when we say friend, it was more along this lines, the way that Jewish culture would have handled it. It would have been more like friend. Does that make sense? Yeah. Like, okay, I'm seeing there's something going on in your heart, and you need to listen. And so instead of it being, oh, friend, it was more in their culture when somebody called somebody out as friend, it was usually their respectful way of saying, you're my brother, but you need to listen kind of thing. And yeah. I wouldn't have caught that if I had not read on how they culturally, you know, use and what the connotation would have been. But I agree with you. It's one of those things that you're like, oh, okay. All right, anything else you can think of? But he did deal with them very calmly. Mm-hmm. And it was respectful. It was very respectful. Anything else on the landowner? Okay, let's talk workers. What do you learn about the workers? Mm-hmm. Are they willing to work?
Yes.
Yeah. Very.
Okay, a worker back then, I'll give you more of this so you can understand cultural background. They literally, there was like, okay, this landowner's land is so massive, and it's harvest time. And he has people that he has paid that would have been his regular workers that would have been working the fields. But harvest is so big right now that he has to hire so many people to help take care of it. Culturally, people did not live the way we lived. And one commentator said, you have to have in your mind, no refrigerators, no canned food, no boxed food, no preservatives. Mm. They literally had to earn daily what they would use to buy their food if they weren't a landowner. Mm. And so the workers would gather before 6 a.m. because the day in the Jewish community was from 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. 6:01 is the next day in their culture. So that's kind of funny because that doesn't match ours. The Roman calendar is different, but the Jewish calendar, that's how they worked. And so before 6 a.m., they would show up ready for that day's worth of work. And they would literally, they said, would have their tools of trade with them so it would be evident to whoever would come by and see the day workers waiting to be hired, they would know what their trade would be because they weren't expecting whoever hired them. So if they were a laborer that was a carpenter or a land person, they might have the tools of that trade with them. And they would just have to wait for somebody to come by and hire them.
I just have this picture of, like, during the Great Depression when people would stand outside of, like, a factory or a plant or whatever that always needed extra help, and someone would point at them and be like, you, I need you, and you need you.
Yeah.
It seems very similar.
Do you know what it is? And in Houston, where I came from, in Houston, we actually have street corners that are known for day labor hire. And in Houston, if you needed somebody to do yard work, or if you needed somebody to do construction work, or if you needed somebody to do kind of like honeydew lists, there are certain streets that you could go to in Houston, and people would pick up people by the pick load and hire them, pickup load, go hire and work ranches and farms. And so it still actually happens today in some places. I've never really seen that here in Omaha in this area, but I would think corn detasseling would be the same kind of concept. During a certain season, they will send out and then hire people to come and get on the buses at a certain place to go and work the cornfields and then drop them off. So it's more organized with our corn detasseling, but you know, same kind of concept. So that's kind of like a modern day example of what it is. So now that I've given you some background, what do you know about the workers?
I mean, they're probably very anxious.
Good.
Not knowing where your next meal or paycheck in our society is coming from. So they're just waiting around for someone to come and give that opportunity.
Yeah, they probably would have seen the gift of the landowner as a gift. Mm-hmm. Like, he gave them work. That was something that they would have needed. And I'm sure they were, at least at first, grateful for the opportunity to work.
Yeah. I would have been grateful, too. And would you have been grateful for somebody to say to you, I will give you a day's wage? A day's wage at their time was a denarius. And to tell you how good of a sum that is, that's the same amount that was given to a Roman soldier.
Wow.
So these day laborers being picked up by this worker, this landowner, were being offered the same thing a Roman soldier was being given. And they made an agreement to, so for them to, you know, what? A denarius? Mm-hmm. Okay. And so in the morning when they were hired, they were excited because they were going to get a denarius for the day.
Yeah.
And so that makes the grumbling and complaining that much more
audacious.
Yes. Because they were being offered beyond what anything they would have been if they were hired in another field, way beyond. And so they were receiving a good sum. Isn't it ironic or kind of funny that in the morning something that we've been offered can sound like a big sum of money, but in the afternoon when we've added in comparisons to others, all of a sudden that's not a big sum. Mm. It's crazy how the mind played a trick on them in this moment. And we'll look more at that at another session. Okay, so the worker, anxious, grateful. Can you think of anything else?
Ungrateful later.
And then ungrateful. We probably, the guys that were hired at 5, they would have been definitely in the, wow, I'm so unworthy of this. You know, they're standing there thinking, I can't believe he just handed me what a Roman soldier makes in a day, and all I did was 1 hour. And they're just kind of standing there looking at it. And the other guys are like, ooh, we're going to get so much more. And then they get the same thing, and they're like, what? You know, I mean, blessed beyond measure. They were not worthy of a denarius starting at 6 a.m., much less at 5 p.m., with only 1 hour left to work. Okay, when you hear this passage, how do you spiritually think this is applied? Because there's many different theologians' theories on it, and I just want to hear from y'all. How would you think that this was spiritually applied?
Well, it has at least something to do with the context that you were talking about, that he was talking to his disciples and telling them that they would inherit the kingdom. And the disciples obviously were the first. They had been working the longest because they've been with Jesus the longest, but they don't receive any more than anyone else. The kingdom is for everyone.
Right. Very good. That was going to be my next question, because this parable is spoken to the disciples. What do you learn about the disciples as Jesus is teaching this?
You kind of see where their heart's at. Like, you can really easily see the parallels between them and the workers that went out first.
Yeah. And if you add in maybe like James and John and their mother asking, can they sit on your right side and your left, you know, and just
power hungry. Yeah,
right. Mm-hmm. You know, that sometimes we can have expectations of greater things when we've already been given. And he told them beforehand, he says, you will sit on the 12 thrones. I mean, you will yeah. be seated with me. He tells them that before he tells this. So they don't have to clamor. They don't have to fight. They don't have to strive. They don't have to argue. They don't have to say, I'm better than him, or he's better than me, or he has his beloved and Peter's the one that he's always working intimately with. Mm-hmm. It's not about favoritism in any way, shape, or form. Comparison should not be a part of it. Mm-hmm. The purpose is the kingdom. It's all about the kingdom. Now, we're only going to have about 2 minutes left, but let's just catch on. What about the day that Jesus took the disciples out and he said, look out at the harvest. Pray to the Lord of the harvest, for the harvest is plentiful, but the workers are few. When you think on that verse and this parable, what do you think that he's wanting them to grasp? Will we ever stop calling laborers? Mm-hmm. No, mm-hmm. even at the last hour before Jesus returns, the laborers have to be prayed for and called for. It is something that will be continuous for the spiritual journey until Christ returns. We will always, as his children, be calling out laborers, praying for the laborers, because the harvest is so grand, it is so big. We will never be able to complete the land development, the cultivating of the hearts that are happening on this earth. It is something that will be a process that we will have to do until the day he returns. Mm-hmm. And the joy is, as Janelle said, though they were the first, even that person who's going to be that last person, the second that he comes in on that white horse and breaks open the earth from as far as the east to the west, that person's value in the kingdom is the same as Peter, James, John, Andrew, Bartholomew, go through them all. I can't list them all. I always miss it. But you know what I mean? Mm. It's the same. The call is the same. We're so thankful you've been listening to Cultivating Hearts. We really want you to come back, and because there's a lot of great truths that we're going to take from this passage. You can contact us at tararye.com, cultivatinghearts, webs.com, or at opendoormission.org. God bless.